but then he literally threw me out of the mixing session, which would not happen now. I mean, here I was a 20-something girl in the 70s where the phrase women in rock was still, you know, a new thing. So here comes, you know, this bloke throwing me out of the studio.
Hello and welcome to episode 51 of Vintage Rock Pod, the ultimate classic rock podcast that proudly claims that my music is better than yours. I'm Paul Stevenson, thanks as always for hitting play. Now on this episode, I finally get to play out the interview I did with Ellen Foley. If you've listened to the tribute shows to Meatloaf and to those stars we lost in 2021, then you'll have heard her talking to me already. Well, you'll get to hear a lot more on today's show. She is famously known as the female singer on the Bat Out of Hell album, significantly Paradise by the Dashboard Light, but she has also had a great solo career. She had a relationship with Mick Jones from The Clash and ended up singing on The Clash songs, and they worked on her album too. She also sang for many others as well, including the Blue Oyster Cult, as well as having a career on Broadway, on TV, and in the movies, such as Cocktail with Tom Cruise. So I'm really looking forward to you hearing my chat with her. But I just want to give you a few mentions first, though, to some people that have been in touch throughout the week. So a big hi to Mark Beavers, who said he met last week's guest, Ian Anderson, many years ago alongside Maggie Bell. Says he's met loads of stars, including Meatloaf and David Bowie. I think we may have to hear from Mark on a future episode, perhaps. Hello also to Julian Caesar, or Cesar, for his kind words. And hello to Carl Watnaby and Karen Slicker. A shout out to Paul Graham as well for manfully continuing to update the Spotify playlist. He's got one there called the Vintage Rock Pod Top Fives, and he basically puts all the top five song recommendations from each episode onto there, and it's building up one heck of a list for you. So check it out on Spotify and give it a like or a follow on there. Although I know right now Spotify is a bit of a taboo subject, isn't it? With Neil Young, Joni Mitchell and Nils Lofgren, I believe, all pulling their music from the platform over the furore, shall we say, surrounding Joe Rogan. But let's move on. And last but not least, a shout out to Rod Boudreau and to Miguel Aguilar as well. It's great to hear from you all this week. Now, on the Facebook group, we were chatting about favourite albums, and I love seeing how different everybody's are. Michelle Verhoes, apologies if I get your name wrong, I say that every week, don't I? Going for Manfred Mann Earth Band's Live in Budapest, while friend of the show, Andy Old, said UK's UK album. Now, that's a band you don't hear about much these days. Alumni including John Wetton and Bill Bruford, among many others, of course. Joey Michaud, who we know from previous posts, is a big Hendrix fan. His favourite album is, no surprisingly, Electric Ladyland, while Eddie Dempsey chose Big Country's Steel Town, a classic. Lots of eclectic choices in there as well, from Fiona Jack going for Mark Bolan and crew with T-Rex's Electric Warrior, and Kay Christian saying the White Album by the Beatles. Yes, legendary indeed. A couple of Pink Floyd shouts in there too. Jorge Amarillo, he said Animals, and John L. Eichmann said Dark Side of the Moon, while Dom Tomaski going for metal and Judas Priest's Screaming for Vengeance. Plenty of fantastic music there. Big thanks to everyone. I can't read them all out, but thanks one and all for interacting on Facebook this week. Now check out the Vintage Rock Pod social media channels if you haven't already done so. Give them a like or a follow, or you can drop me an email as well. I'd love to hear from you. VintageRockPod@gmail.com. That's VintageRockPod@gmail.com, and I'll give you a little mention on next week's show. I'd love to hear your stories about maybe the people I interview, or maybe your dalliances with classic rock stars in the past. Anyway, but let's move on to this week's show then, and let's turn to Ellen Foley. Now, I'll be honest, I did get a bit of criticism recently from someone that there wasn't enough females on the show. Certainly not an intentional thing. We have had the Queen of Rock and Roll, Susie Quattro, on the show, and Canadian metal queen Lee Aronon too, and various other authors and journalists and things like that. But I have reached out and tried to get female rock stars on the programme. In fact, an interview with Go-Go star, new Rock and Roll Hall of Famers, of course, Kathy Valentine, was cancelled on the day of the recording due to terrible weather in Texas at the time. Now, when we think of classic rock, and I look back at the 60s, 70s and 80s, it was a different time back then, shall we say. The scene obviously dominated by, let's be honest, white males, which is reflected in the guests on the show. And you'll hear a story that Ellen tells in this very episode, which strikes home just how women were treated in the industry back then. So I'm delighted to be able to speak with Ellen, and I did so on January the 3rd. So this is obviously a few weeks prior to the sad passing of Meatloaf, so that's why there's no mention of that in this interview. But Ellen released a new solo album last year. It was great to be able to highlight that, and she talks about the Bat Out of Hell days, of course, the difficulty surrounding the mystery of the female singer on the album in the Paradise by the Dashboard Light, and why someone else took her place for the promotional duties in the video. There's, of course, chat about her time here in England with Mick from The Clash and working with legends like Mick Ronson and Ian Hunter, and her time on Broadway too. There's loads and loads in this. But let's start the interview with her meeting with Jim Steinman and Meatloaf back in the 70s. The meeting with Meatloaf and Jim Steinman while you were performing on that National Lampoon show. I mean, let's start with how you finally met them and how the alchemy all started from there.
Well, it was, you know, your typical, you know, you audition for a show and you get the part. And we ended up touring. It wasn't, you know, a tour where you have your own private jet. Let me put it that way. We were in this blue van schlepping around the country, and you get to know people pretty well. And that's when Jim was writing the Bat Out of Hell songs. And, you know, there was singing in the show. So he got into my singing. And as he was writing Paradise, basically, wrote it for me and Meat, and we would be working on it with him, like in the afternoons before shows. You know, he'd find a piano somewhere, wherever we were.
Wow.
And when he was creating those songs whole cloth, from nothing.
Incredible. So from that stage then, I mean, obviously that's the very early point of that album and that record and those songs coming together. Could you feel that they were special even from that very beginning?
Oh, yeah, because they had an amazing pop sound, rock and roll sound. There were, you know, the melodies and stuff that you can relate to and you might have heard somewhere in other music that you grew up with, but there was a completely unique point of view. I mean, particularly in the lyrics, you certainly never heard anything as sophisticated, as poetic, and as dramatic as that. You know, Springsteen, I think Springsteen influenced Jim. You can hear that in The Big Sound, as well, of course, Phil Spector. But I think that those writers were pretty much, what should I say? I don't want to say Springsteen was more basic, but, you know, wrote about, you know, driving around in cars, you know, and eventually Bruce started writing about the working man. But at that point, and then Jim comes out with Death and Angels and Sex in the Front Seat of a Car. You know, stuff you haven't heard before.
Absolutely. And then obviously you sang on that record, and the record went to become one of the biggest records of all time, 50 million plus sales and things like that. But at that point, you weren't able to promote that, were you? Although you were the female singer on the record, you weren't the one that could tour it. You weren't even in the video, were you?
That's right. I was not.
How did that feel at the time then? Because obviously it's great that you had work, but at the same time, this record's going and you couldn't be part of that kind of movement.
I was, you know, soon after I was working on demos for my own record deal. And, you know, I was in films and TV and stuff like that. But it was, you know, a choice I made because I knew that I had my own future that was coming in the very near future. So it was a decision I made, you know. And, you know, it was rough, you know, for a while there. I have to admit that when the video was out there, you know, people thought that Carla was singing it, you know, which could have been avoided. I mean, come on, you know, who does that? Well, we know who does that. We know who did that. But but like I always say, through the years, people know me. And if they don't know, it was me singing by now, you know, who cares?
Absolutely. And as life comes full circle, you mentioned Carla there, who is almost the face in a way, but she actually sings on a song on your new record, doesn't she? And it's a fantastic upbeat pop song, well, rock song. And it's great to see you. You guys are friends and everything like that, which is fantastic.
Yes, we over the last, I guess, 5 or 6 years, we have become really good friends. I just spoke to her on New Year's Day.
Oh, brilliant.
And we have a we have a very strong connection. You know, she's wonderful.
Good stuff. So let's just talk about that. I mean, your album Fighting Words, it came out last year. We'll talk about that song with Carla now. I'm Just Happy to Be Here. It is an upbeat rocking song, and it's a lot of fun, and the video's a lot of fun too, isn't it?
Oh, good. You saw the video.
Yeah.
It's just too bad at this point in time there's not an MTV or somebody where that video could get more exposure
because yeah, absolutely.
I just think, you know, it's out of sight. I mean, it's on YouTube, and then it's on Vimeo, which I didn't even know existed before this time. But, you know, I just think the thing I got so much response, you know, from women that they felt it was empowering because it was about, you know, how you should be happy with your life as it is. But, you know, the life you had in the past was meaningful. And it is about the relationship between me and her, too, which maybe people knowing the past, knowing that it could have been like some sort of, you know, meow thing. but it ended up, you know, with two mature women who really love each other.
And a great friendship, absolutely. So I definitely recommend everyone check out the video, because like I said, it is a lot of fun, an awful lot of fun. You can tell that both of you are having a lot of fun in the video as well, in the making of that.
So. Oh, it was just great. It was just so much fun, yeah.
And it's nice to see some of the flashback footage as well from both of you in that video.
Right. I'm like, woo, hot. Man,
absolutely. in terms of the album itself, then, Fighting Words, first new solo album in 8 years. As I said, it's released last year. Tell us about your thoughts around that album then, and the creating of it. Was it planned pre-COVID kind of world shutting down sort of thing?
Yes, it was. Because it had been, even pre-COVID, we all did it in our own corners. And it was interesting the way it came together. Yeah, you know, it was Paul Faglino, who I've worked with for several years. We did a record in 2013, you know, called About Time. And then there was this period in between. And he had been coming to me with songs. And I was sort of, you know, lukewarm about things. Okay, you know, I'll in my living room, I'll do vocals. And then it turned out, you know, he had been sending, you know, rhythm tracks to all the players, to Slim Simon, our guitar player, Charlie Roth, and he had done the bass and drums with Steve Golding. My great backing singer, Ula Hedwig. Everybody got the tracks and did it on their own and sent them back. Then I did the vocals in my living room here in New York.
Incredible.
And you know, once again, I was like, okay, Paul, I'll do this for you. You know, he keeps bugging me. Okay, all right. And then it comes out and everybody's like, wow, this is great. So all of a sudden I'm like, wow, this is great.
So if he's writing songs and coming up with things like that, I've heard you said that it's the album, a lot of the songs have got personal connections. They represent something that you've made it through in life. So how do you take, well, how does Paul take your ideas and form them into songs? And how does that process work?
Well, I think because he's been with me and he and I, you know, we have a very comfortable relationship with each other. He's definitely not somebody who I think really opens up a lot to people. And I stay a little to myself, but we spent time together and, you know, we really talk about things and he takes what he knows about my life or, you know, or stuff that's going on. All the songs aren't necessarily biographical or anything like that, but stuff that fits together in terms of what's going on in his world and my world at this point.
Good stuff. And like I said before, it's a proper upbeat rock and roll record and it's out now. You can get your hands on it if you want to. The best way to find out about Fighting Words is, and anything to do with Ellen, is to go to your website, isn't it? EllenFoley.com and your social media and that sort of thing. And we can follow you and see what you're up to and where we can get hold of that record. Especially here in Europe, there is a way you can actually get hold of a physical CD through a company as well now.
I think so. Yeah. Yes. There are CDs and there are some signed CDs that people kind of snatched up, but we can always do more. But it's definitely findable. It's there, you know. I mean, on Amazon and all your regular places.
Absolutely. Yeah. And speaking of solo records, let's jump back to the 70s and talk about two of the legends you worked with, Ian Hunter and Mick Ronson, on your first solo album, Night Out, which featured the big hit, We Belong to the Night. Now, what was it like working with Ian and Mick around that time? Because we spoke about the end of the kind of Paradise and things like that. You were working on your album with these guys, weren't you?
Yeah, well, it took a little time. Steve Popovich, who was sort of the father of all this, you know, he signed Meatloaf and he signed me, you know, straight away. And he and I had been working and doing demos. And then he introduced me to Ian and Mick. And we actually went up to the Bearsville studio, which was Todd Rundgren's studio, where Paradise had been recorded, did some demos up there. And we all were agreeable with each other. You know, I think that my ignorance at the time sort of was in my favor, because I didn't really know that much about Mott the Hoople. And I knew that Mick had played with Bowie and all that. But if I had been, like, you know, a super fan, I probably would have been paralyzed, you know, with adoration. But as it was, yep, I just got to know them as artists and people. And then, of course, as time went on, I was like, holy crap, look who's here, you know.
And what was it like being in the studio then with those guys? I mean, them bringing their experience to it, and you having had your experience with the Meatloaf sessions and everything. What was it like being in the studio with those two?
Well, I think, you know, particularly Ian, because Ian was kind of like the, I won't say father, but kind of the boss guy. Mm-hmm. And a couple of times, you know, I got the impression that he said, oh, she's a Broadway singer, which I have done Broadway, but I'll say flat out, I am not a Broadway singer. So he kind of gave me crap about that a little bit. And we had run-ins during the mix of the record, because I was in there with the mix. And of course, all I was doing was sitting there telling him the vocals should be louder, more vocals, and which I think some of it I was right. But then he literally threw me out of the mixing session, which would not happen now. I mean, here I was a 20-something girl in the 70s, where, you know, the phrase women in rock was still, you know, something interesting, you know, a new thing. So here comes, you know, this bloke, as you guys would say, throwing me out of the studio, you know. But otherwise, it was a ball. I mean, I remember the sessions for things like Young Lust, right? Yep. Which was you know, with the lights down and Ronson playing that, you know, Heart Full of Stone a guitar riff and was just like improvise, you know, I mean, stuff like that. Oh, you know, because theatricality had a place, because Ronson came from such a theatrical place. So he, you know, he certainly got it. And Ian did too, even though he gave me crap. I did Broadway, but because I'm kind of a chameleon, I was able to do it. But just being back doing rock and roll these past, you know, from 2014 on, I've also been going over to the Netherlands and Belgium and performing a lot too. So I've just been getting back to real roots. I was supposed to go today over to the Netherlands. This is the third time it's been canceled because of COVID. I was supposed to go this spring of 2020. I was supposed to go last spring then, and then today, this week. Not happening.
What a shame. What a shame. Hopefully at some point it all calms down and we can all get back to normal. Just touching again on your second album then, and some of the things that happened around the second album. I mean, obviously it's famously documented that you dated Mick Jones from The Clash, and they were obviously a huge band as well, and that led to a really cool collaboration between yourself and Mick and Joe and the rest of the band, Topper and all that sort of stuff, not only on your second album, Spirit of St. Louis, but on their albums as well. You sang songs on Sandy Easter and other things like that. I mean, obviously, personal things aside, I mean, how was that as a working relationship with you guys?
It was fun. I was a little bit fish out of water. I felt like I was back in the studio with Ian Hunter because vocally, I didn't think I was at my, I was able to do my, you know, real rock and roll peak. You know, I mean, in this show we were just about to do, we were doing a little mashup of Torchlight, which was from my second album, and Hitsville, UK, which, you know, Hitsville, UK is basically me, you know, multi-tracked. And we were going to do a great version of it. And I was excited about that. But it was a whole, you know, new experience for me, you know, a life experience, you know, being in this, I mean, it was like, what, 79, you know, 2 years after 1977, when, you know, these guys and other people created a whole new sort of genre and life. But, you know, and here I am like, hello, I'm from St. Louis, Missouri. How I got into that. But anyway, I always say that life experience adds up to where you are right now. And I'm good. I'm good. I'm cool. Life is great.
And what was it like being in the UK then around that time, coming over here and experiencing all that sort of stuff?
It was, you know, a little bleak for me. You know, that was, you know, right in the middle of the Thatcher stuff. And I just always remember something that's like emblematic for me is like when the pubs closed at 9 or 10 o'clock, there would just be people outside of pubs just beating each other up, you know, because you know, their outlet, they've been cut off. And but it was a little rough. And coming from New York, really, it's so crazy how compressed my experience was in that decade, because I had just, you know, moved to New York from the Midwest, from St. Louis in 1972. And here, you know, 8 years later, here I am in a whole other scene.
Whole other lifestyle.
Whole absolutely. Other movie.
Yes,
a whole
indeed.
Other movie.
And speaking of which, we should touch on that. I mean, you did do another solo album after that, Another Breath. And then as you speak about movies, I mean, you appeared again on stage, you did TV shows, and then Hollywood came calling and you appeared in some huge films as well, Married to the Mob and Fatal Attraction, and alongside a certain Tom Cruise in Cocktail. I mean, how was that?
It was great. You know, I kind of felt like, oof, now I can, because after the third album, you know, I wasn't getting a lot of support from the record company, and it was sort of a negative experience. And just, you know, I was like, fine, that's my commitment. And I was really lucky that I switched gears and, you know, started getting all this work and great work. You know, I did two Broadway shows. I did this Me and My Girl, then I did Into the Woods, which was just like the most spectacular piece of performing I ever got to do. Stephen Sondheim, the witch, who was just really dark. This one of the producers came back after one of the performances on Broadway. But he said, oh, you're like a female Mick Jagger, which is the thing I wanted to hear my entire life. But that's a whole other show. You know, and the movies and, you know, it was a great time. And I met my husband in 1989 when I was just at the end of the run. It's sort of interesting the way things move. Into the Woods was just ending. I didn't make him. I met him. I met him, but I made him too. And then, you know, over the next year or so, I was married and had a kid, which, you know, took me away from everything because I have two of them, kids, for a long time. And I think I got very gun shy about going out there, especially since I wasn't doing music. I didn't want to audition for things. You know, I was like, no, no, no. And then the show in, I guess, 2008 came along, and where I met Paul, and we started, you know, writing songs and gigging, and then made the rec. You know, so everything has added up to be. And then coming back, you know, that this whole thing was really unexpected, you know, and we're ending up on a couple of lists. You know, Paul Zollo, you know, is a great journalist, lists of best records of 2021. So I'm like, lovely, you know.
Absolutely. And you talk about coming back and you talk about gigging there. I mean, you've done some shows the back end of 2021, and how nice is it to be out in front of people again and performing your songs and performing your new material too?
It was great because I have a really good band. And I have now this musical director. His name's Charlie Roth. He also played on the record. You know, just somebody who's such a pro, who I don't have to worry about anything but getting up there and singing. And we did one show at this place, you know, called the Bowery Electric. And it was this tiny place with people standing up. It was like, you know, an old rock gig, and it was so great. And then we were, you know, thinking, oh, good, 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 good. We're going to keep playing, you know, and had this gig booked in this bigger gig, this sort of sit down, more grown up place, the Cutting Room. I already told you the sad story about that.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you, Ellen. I hope you have a fantastic future coming up. I hope everything settles down and you get to perform all your gigs that you've got lined up, even in 2023.
Me too. Okay, bye-bye.
The wonderful Ellen Foley there. Check out her new album, Fighting Words, and give her a follow on all the social media channels. Right, it's the time of the show where I give you my top five. And in this week, I'm going to do it in tribute to the legend that is Meatloaf. Now, remember, this is my personal choice. I don't claim it to be the definitive list. It's not a critic's choice. No, it's very subjective, and it's okay if you do not agree with this top five. But I would like to hear your top fives in response. But here we go. My favourite five songs from Meatloaf, according to Vintage Rock Pod. At number five, well, if you'd have asked me a week ago, then this song wouldn't have made my list. Not because it's not a great song, but because it's one that had kind of passed me by, if I'm being honest. But my guest on the Meatloaf tribute show, Stephanie Myers, pointed this one out, and I've played it a lot these last few days. It is a great song. It's upbeat and rocking, and it's tucked away in the middle of his 2006 album, Bat Out of Hell 3, The Monster Is Loose. And because I've played it so much recently, it's going in at number five. And number five is Alive. At number four is a song that will appear in pretty much everyone's list, I think. It was so different, and you'll hear it at most karaoke bars at least once every night. It's in three sections, it changes pace countless times, and is a ball of, well, sex, sweat, and humour. From the Bat Out of Hell album, at number four is Paradise by the Dashboard Light. At number three is one from the Bat Out of Hell 2 album in 1993. Jim Steinman said that this was the hardest song to write and get across. It's deep and dark subject matter, hauntingly biographical. It builds and builds, and the haunting memories are always met with the lines like, "It was long ago or far away," hence the title. At three is Objects in the Rearview Mirror May Appear Closer Than They Are. At two is a song that never fails to get you going. It's a rollicking, upbeat, rousing song that pounds along at 100 miles per hour. A duet with Cher that comes from the album of the same name from 1981. And number two for me is Dead Ringer for Love. And at number one, maybe a fairly obvious choice, but it's a song that literally came out of nowhere. When it came to recording the album, the critics panned the idea, thinking it laughable in this time to hark back to the Bat Out of Hell days of the late 70s. But what did they know? It catapulted Meatloaf back into the mainstream. It went to number one in 28 countries around the world. It was the biggest selling song in the UK in 1993. You heard it all the time, you heard it everywhere. And it may be cliche, but it's a brilliant song and one that's always stuck with me. My favourite Meatloaf song and the number one song according to Vintage Rock Pod is I'd Do Anything for Love, But I Won't Do That. So there you go, my favourite five songs from the mighty Meatloaf. As ever, there were a ton of other songs I could have chosen. Likes of Two Out of Three Ain't Bad, You Took the Words Right Out of My Mouth, Hot Patootie, Rock and Roll Dreams Come True, Life's a Lemon, For Crying Out Loud, Bat Out of Hell, of course, as well. but it is my choice and that's what I've gone with. It has been an interesting week or so since the passing of Meatloaf. Everywhere I've gone, you get to hear Meatloaf and people just really, really appreciating the music that he developed. I mean, I was in HMV, which is, for anyone that doesn't know, or from overseas, it's a huge music store here in the UK, and they're playing the Bat Out of Hell album in full. I got back in the car from that very trip, and Absolute Classic Rock were playing Bat Out of Hell. It's just one of those things that is everywhere at the moment, and it's lovely to see. But as ever, I'd love to hear your thoughts on my list. Where do you agree? Where do you disagree with my Meatloaf selection? Get in touch and tell me what your top five Meatloaf songs would be. Get them in order as well, because I'd love to hear that. Drop me an email, vintagerockpod@gmail.com, and I'll give you a mention on next week's episode. I'd also like to ask you to share the word of Vintage Rock Pod. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell your work colleagues, tell anyone who likes classic rock, really, just to check out the show. If you can, also leave a 5-star rating on Spotify. Should I whisper that? Spotify. Because there's a new section where you can do that nowadays. You just click onto the podcast section and you can rate it there. So give us 5 stars on Spotify, please. Or you can give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It really does help with the show's visibility, helps me to reach out to more different people as well, and grow the crowd of followers following this podcast series. And the best bit is, it's absolutely free for you to do as well. And I've got some great guests lined up for the coming week, some varied styles and different eras too, with different tales to tell, so you don't want to miss out. If you haven't already, please do check out the Vintage Rock Pod social media channels. Click like or comment on the posts just to make sure you don't miss any. The algorithms stop showing you things from groups you don't interact with, so it's always nice to click on them. And subscribe to the channel on YouTube as well, where you'll find various videos from interviews I've done throughout the series. And if this is your first listen, then thank you very much for doing so. But make sure to follow or subscribe to Vintage Rock Pod on whatever podcast platform you use so you don't miss any new episodes dropping. They usually come out every Monday. So please do check the back catalogue as well, with some incredible big name guests I've had on the show, a whole host of superstars, multi-million sellers, Grammy Award winners, Rock and Roll Hall of Famers, you name it. There's so much to enjoy. They've all got great rock and roll stories to tell as well. So some of the people you may not think you know a lot about, listen to these stories because they are fantastic. Anyway, that's it for episode 51 then. Until the next one, remember, if you come across anyone who isn't a fan of classic rock, just tell them, my music is better than yours. Take care.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.